Welcome in to your The Cure right here on AM 5. Almost at Your Health Today, but that's tomorrow's show. You're The Cure right here with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, you can always check it out right there on veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade.
How are you doing? Hope you had a great weekend.
I did. Had a good weekend.
Good, good. No corona fears, I'm sure.
Oh, no. Fear nothing.
Fear nothing. That's what we were talking about just prior to. And today we got Morley Robbins on the phone.
Yeah.
So he's back
with us. First Mondays with Morley.
First Monday.
Big, exciting show today on maternal and infant health is what we're going to talk about. Just before we dive into that, I know everyone's asking me about coronavirus, so I'll just say it one more time.
Okay.
Don't fear, no anxiety, don't worry about it. What you need to worry about is your terrain. The germ is nothing. The terrain is everything. That came out of the Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard debate back in the day. And it turns out our body's well-equipped to handle these viruses. So chill out, relax, don't worry about it. Now, the ones that need to worry, if you're going to worry, are the ones who aren't monitoring their terrain, the diabetic, the obese, the overweight, the smokers, the ones taking synthetic vitamin D and iron and calcium supplementation, which is a lot of Americans. So, yeah, America's going to get hit hard because we're probably the worst terrained country in the world, industrialized for sure. And the folks in China that are getting hit, saw a report, the percentage of people over there that smoke tobacco, and of course the air pollution is awful, so their lungs are susceptible to these viruses. So work on the terrain. That's the biggest take-home message. I'm not going to say any more about that because this show that we're doing with Morley today has so much impact, and it's also about the terrain. And what we're going to talk about with Morley today is maternal health and fetal health, infant health. And I need to remind everybody, it's been a while since I've talked about maternal mortality and infant mortality in the U.S., but take a wild guess. Where do you think we rank? Where does America rank in maternal and infant mortality rates? We're dead last. We are the worst as far as maternal deaths in the developed world. The United States is the most dangerous place for a woman to deliver a baby in the industrialized world.
Unbelievable.
And even against some third world countries, it's safer. And this is a report out of The Lancet. This was from 2015, and they were looking at data from 1990, 2000, and 2015. So I'm sure the 2020 data will be out at the end of the year. But if listeners could see this graph, so there's all these black lines charting maternal mortality in all these different countries: the UK, Portugal, Germany, France, Canada, Netherlands, Spain, Australia, Ireland, Sweden, Italy, Denmark, Finland. And they're all, these black lines are trending down, 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 down. But there's one line that's going exponentially up, 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 and that's the United States. We are the only country, not only are we number one in mortality rates, but it's rising at 26.4 deaths per 100,000 live births. Just to give you a comparison, the UK is 9.2 deaths. We're at 26.4. And Portugal's at 9, Germany's at 9, Netherlands are 6.7, Australia's at 5, Italy's at 4, Finland's at 3.8 compared to 26.4 maternal mortality. And that's not even getting into the infant mortality, which we're number one in. And especially if you look at some of the they pulled certain cities in America, Washington, D.C., they looked at infant death rates, and compared to the 25 other industrialized capital cities, of course, we were the worst, 7.9 deaths per 1,000 live births. But then if you look at Cleveland and Detroit, 14.1 and 12.4, respectively, deaths, baby infant deaths per 1,000 live births, and this was in 2011. And the under age 5 mortality in the United States is 6.9 per 1,000 live births. So, I mean, our babies are sick and they're dying at rates that, and no one's talking about it. I mean, I've seen CBS do a little bit, NPR's done a little bit, but pretty much nobody's talking about this. So, it's a big problem. We're sick. We're dying when in other countries they aren't dying. So what's the deal? Yeah, we're a really big country, and yeah, there's lots of socioeconomic factors, and yeah, our terrain is totally jacked up. And we're going to talk about some specifics on that today from a mineral standpoint, of course, First Mondays with Morley. So, Morley, I know you've got a lot to dive into on today's show, and I want you to pace yourself, and I'm going to try to pull the reins in because Morley's been emailing me and texting me all kinds of really good stuff, super good stuff. So we need to dive right in. But Morley, welcome to the show. Thank you for spending another hour of your precious time with us, specifically with this topic, which is near and dear to my heart. I used to deliver babies, love delivering babies. That was the funnest part of being a doctor. Of course, we have six kids. I love kids, love babies, and who doesn't? I mean, it's a joyful, it should be a joyful time of life. We shouldn't even think about maternal and infant death during this time. But unfortunately, here in America, it is a statistic that is awful. But there's root causes to it, and it is multifactorial for sure. But there is this common root cause that we need to address. So Morley, welcome, and we can just dive right in to get your opinion on where you think this mortality rate, both maternal and infant, could be rooted in, or feel free to give any opening comments too.
Yeah, no, that's a great opening volley, and thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion. I'll just go right to the punchline, just to set the stage for people. And I think many of your listeners know that I've been doing this research now for a little over 10 years on a daily basis, 7 days a week, including Sundays. I spend 2 to 3 hours reading literature, reflecting, trying to kind of muse about what's really going on. And I had a major epiphany today. I asked a different question of Dr. Google. I never know what I'm going to get, but today was a kind of a surprise. And so people know that I've had this obsession with magnesium and then got into copper and then let's regulate iron and, oh, my gosh, it's the oxygen molecule that's the problem. But there's an aspect of research in mineral metabolism that talks about enzymes being dependent on this mineral or that mineral. And we've talked about it on the show that you know, there's 5,700 or 4,700, so whatever the number. It's 42%, so it's 5,700 enzymes are magnesium dependent. Huge percentage. And then you get to copper, and it's like, well, it might be a couple hundred. And when you really pull back the curtain, the purists will say, well, there are only 9 copper-dependent enzymes. And it's at some level, you know, it has a small percentage in our body, and you think, well, yeah, I guess it's possible. Well, the way the research unfolded today was very different and revealed why I think we have this crisis in the maternity suite. And I think it's not at all surprising that we are dead last, because I think the training of birthing practitioners is dead last. I think it's the most moronic, demonic, dangerous training on the planet, because it's not based on reality and it's not based on minerals. And so when you get inside the mitochondria, and every cell in our body has mitochondria, except for the red blood cells, interestingly enough, so that's 25% of our cells have no mitochondria. That's fascinating to think about. But in any event, the average cell in the human body has about 100 mitochondria. The average heart cell has 5,000 mitochondria. And what may surprise the listeners is to find out that the average mature egg cell, called an oocyte, has around 300,000 mitochondria. And the mitochondria do not work without copper. Now, what the purists will tell us is that there's 5 what are called complexes inside the mitochondria, complex Roman 1 through Roman 5. and 1 through 4 are what are called the electron transport chain, ETC. And then complex 5, when it's hooked up to complex 4, the term that's used is called oxidative phosphorylation, because they love to use these big fancy terms but not tell us what it really means.
That really bugged me in medical school, by the way.
The big fancy terms. Big fancy terms. But all oxidative phosphorylation means is that you got to be able to activate oxygen in order to put phosphate groups on the adenosine protein. That's all it means. And the battery that runs our body is called adenosine triphosphate, ATP, but it's got to have a little magnesium there. So it's technically spelled magnesium hyphen ATP. So that complex 5 is really important, but so is complex 4 right before it. Well, complex 4 has 4 coppers inside it. Well, probably, I think it's the most important enzyme on the planet, but I'm goofy that way, because it turns oxygen into water so we can let the ADP go over to complex 5 so they can become the energy molecules. What I've long suspected but was never able to find proof of it was that it always seemed to me that, gosh, copper must have some role in complex 5, but I was never able to get it in the literature. And then found a study from 2000 that changed everything for me this morning. And like Dr. Ben said, I've been pestering him with notes, trying to calm myself down. So we all drive cars, and we can all relate to those cars that we drive. Some of us drive trucks, I suppose, but most of us drive cars. And we know that the engine of our car is battery dependent. The engine will not turn over if there isn't a battery attached to it. So picture the battery being copper, and that complex 4 is your engine. So complex 4 is battery dependent. But let's step away from that and say, is our car battery dependent? I asked my wife that this morning. First question when I come home, she always wants to know what's new. I said, is your car battery dependent? She said, well, of course it is. And any reasonable person who has ever driven a car, don't have to be a mechanic, you do know that a car is battery dependent. We know that. But to the purist, to the scientist, no, it's your engine that's battery dependent, and the car just runs on its own. And that's what they want us to believe. And the revelation this morning was to realize that in fact, the whole mechanism of the mitochondria is copper dependent, especially complex 5. Because when they denied mice and rats copper in their diet, complex 5 stopped working. And the little mitochondria were not able to put out energy. And it shocked the scientists who were studying it 20 years ago. Well, what should be real important for people to realize is that the mitochondria, from soup to nuts, are copper dependent. And what are 3 proven ways to undermine the copper status of the mitochondria? Focus on iron, focus on vitamin D, and focus on folic acid. And that's the cornerstone of modern obstetrics. And there's no thought given to copper status in the mom, no thought given to ceruloplasmin status in the mom, no training about the role that 2 critical copper-dependent enzymes play in the developing womb of the mother. There's ceruloplasmin, and there's a protein or an enzyme called zyklopen, Z-Y-K-L-O-P-E-N. And no woman who's ever been pregnant has ever had a birthing practitioner ever talk about ceruloplasmin and zyklopen. Because they haven't, that's why we're dead last. Because if ceruloplasmin and diclopen aren't doing their job, then you don't have copper. You don't have copper-regulating iron, and you don't have the natural development of the fetus. Now, I'm not going to suggest that none of the other 140 nations on the planet are obsessing about ceruloplasmin and diclopen. We know that's not true. But what they do not obsess about is iron, vitamin D, and folic acid, and that's a fact. And because this country obsesses on those three nutrients above all others, it is killing the copper-driven mechanism that drives all life on this planet. And what should unnerve people listening to this program is that the word, and I've talked to probably 100 different practitioners, physicians, naturopaths, chiropractors, herbalists, nurses, nurse practitioners, not one practitioner has ever acknowledged that the word copper was used in their training. Not even once. And that should be a very unsettling realization, is that the very mineral that allows us to be on this planet, to activate the oxygen, to release the energy molecules, isn't even considered or studied or examined in any kind of health practitioner training program. And to me, it's the most mind-numbing sense of disconnection with reality. And so there are three phrases that have been intriguing me for years that I've never been able to understand until the article that I found yesterday, which we'll talk about in a minute. But Mildred Seelig was a famous magnesium researcher. She was a mother, but also a magnesium researcher. And her phrase was pregnancy is a magnesium deficient state from start to finish. Fascinating. What did she mean? Then we find from Dr. Sir Joseph Barcroft from 1946 said that pregnancy is Mount Everest in utero. Wow. So that would imply that there's not much oxygen down there. And then the third phrase that was fascinating, this was during my training with Dr. Jerry Tennant in Dallas. He was talking about the similarity between cancer tumors and the growing fetus. The fetal tissue and the cancer tissue are almost identical. Well, we know that cancer is an anaerobic metabolism. And the fascinating discovery from yesterday was an article that was talking about the role that the mitochondria play in the metabolic regulation of cancer, especially when they don't have the ability to work with oxygen. And this is the phrase that caught my eye. It is well known that anaerobic glycolysis, so the conversion of sugar without the presence of oxygen, anaerobic glycolysis is the major means of cellular ATP production in fetal organs. That was an arresting discovery, to find out that the fetus grows in an anaerobic environment. Well, you need magnesium in order to grow in an anaerobic environment, because anaerobic glycolysis depends on magnesium. Again, the women on this, listening to this program, whether their pregnancy was years ago or they're right in the midst of it, they need to be asking themselves, gee, I wonder why my doctor never measures my magnesium status. Most second to copper be the most important thing to know. And so no consideration given to copper, no consideration given to magnesium. And what does the research tell us? You just shared with the Lancet article, we're dead last because we have no understanding of the regulatory and energy-driving role that minerals play in the body, but most importantly, in the developing fetus. And so because we don't understand ceruloplasmin, because we don't understand zyklopen, because we don't understand minerals, then we're left with wringing hands trying to figure out why is our mortality rate so high, when in fact it's so patently obvious what the problem is. Because the body doesn't know the developing fetus is working in a very oxygen-poor environment. And the enzymes that are designed by Mother Nature to regulate energy production in that low oxygen environment are completely ignored by convention. And that, I think, is why we're dead last. And then to add insult to injury, the obsession is around iron status. And let's make sure that your hemoglobin stays above 12, when in fact, Dr. Steer in the UK did a study of 150,000 live births and very clearly demonstrated that the healthiest babies were born to women who had hemoglobin between 8.5 and 9.5. Well, for a woman to have a natural childbirth today, their hemoglobin must be between 10 and 12, preferably above 12, and most birthing centers in the country will not allow a woman to have a birth unless the hemoglobin is above 10, thereby guaranteeing that the child will not be healthy because there's too much iron in the mother. And the womb becomes an iron cage, and it changes the energy dynamics of the developing fetus. And then the other thing, and then I'll pause because I'm sure people are kind of trying to have trouble trying to catch their breath. The study that really changed my understanding of all this, it was from 1960, so it's 40 years old, so it's ancient, so it has no relevance, right? Because it's from 1960, or it's just like no, 60 years ago, not 40, it's 60 years ago, so. What they learned in 1960 was that ceruloplasmin was not just regulating iron, but it was also regulating serotonin. And it turns out that that neurotransmitter, which we've been trained to call the happy hormone, well, it does more than just make us happy. It guarantees that the blood vessels stay dilated, so there's optimal movement of blood and oxygen. And so in a low oxygen environment, serotonin is going to be increased, so that in a developing fetus, there's going to be more serotonin than normal. And that the mother is supposed to be producing active ceruloplasmin to turn off that serotonin so it doesn't overwhelm the baby. And what happens if there isn't enough active serotonin? Two things can happen. One,
I mean, active ceruloplasmin. Right.
And when there is an active ceruloplasmin,
right,
and the serotonin starts to build,
yep,
you can either have spontaneous abortion or you can produce a child with autism. And so I think women should really sit up and take notice of the fact that, gee, I wonder why my doctor's not measuring this ceruloplasmin thingy. I wonder why my doctor's not measuring my magnesium status. And why is the doctor worrying about iron and vitamin D and folic acid? And what the listeners need to know is that, in a conversation I had with a world-renowned copper expert, Leslie Clavey, I said, Dr. Clavey, which of the B vitamins are copper-dependent? He said, well, Morley, I can't speak for all of them. He said, but I can tell you with absolute certainty. I can remember the conversation like it happened this morning. I can remember, he said, I can tell you with absolute certainty that B9 folate is copper dependent. So the reason why people are having trouble with folic acid is it's synthetic and it doesn't have copper. And that's where the crisis is in methylation. Methylation is copper dependent. So there's a lot of confusion in the world of obstetrics, and there's a lot of misunderstanding. And if the birthing practitioner that you're going to is focusing on iron, focusing on vitamin D, and focusing on folic acid, you might want to step back and rethink that relationship, because I think it's one that's going to be feeding into America is dead last with maternal health. So I'll stop there.
Yeah, that's a lot to consume, and we'll definitely break it down more after the break. And I think the best way to break this down is to focus on that prenatal vitamin, because that is such a obsession by pregnant ladies, and I understand why, because it's really pushed. But the prenatal vitamins are going to contain typically iron, calcium, and synthetic forms of all these vitamins, vitamin B, vitamin D, vitamin A, retinol, and zinc. So we'll go through each one of those, especially when it's a synthetic form, and talk about its effect on the Swiss Army knife. As hopefully the listeners remember, ceruloplasmin that Morley keeps talking about, that's the Swiss Army knife. That is the protein that has all these different functions in the body, 24 plus functions in the body. And one of the functions is in the womb. And as Morley talked about, just one piece of that function in the womb is to downregulate the serotonin. Without the Swiss Army knife, ceruloplasmin, keeping the serotonin from getting overproduced in the womb, then that serotonin will be overproduced, and that will predispose that fetus to being prematurely, being aborted, so miscarriage, spontaneous abortion. And it'll predispose that fetus to autism, this excess serotonin. So that's fascinating. But the ceruloplasmin is absolutely essential for management of the whole copper and iron relationship, management of oxygen, energy production. And so we'll get into that specifically in the womb. What is that doing? And then how these different prenatal vitamin ingredients impact the levels of that ceruloplasmin. And I do want to just go back and highlight again, cause you mentioned it, but I want to make a big highlight on this, because midwives call me often about hemoglobin levels. I mean, patients will often call, pregnant ladies call, worried about their hemoglobin level being too low, and they were told to get on iron. So I want to reiterate that study by Dr. Steer, S-T-E-E-R, 1995.
Yeah,
1995, 150,000 live births, and the healthiest babies, their average hemoglobin, it was the babies with the lowest hemoglobin, which...
The moms
with the lowest hemoglobin, 8.5 to 9.5. And for the listeners who are new, hemoglobin is just the protein inside your red blood cell that holds the iron and carries the oxygen around the body. And typically, in non-pregnant, kind of normal levels of hemoglobin, you're up in the 12, 13, 14 range. But normal, healthy moms, normal, healthy pregnancies, normal, healthy deliveries, and the healthiest birthed babies, these mamas, they drop their hemoglobin level to 8.5 to 9.5. So I don't think there's a midwife or obstetrician in America who would pass the test if they were asked that, given a multiple choice question on a test. Where are the healthiest babies at, coming out of the moms with the hemoglobin at 8.5 or 12.5? Everybody picked 12.5. But Steer, and this is a big study, 150,000 live births. So that's something that needs to be noted for sure.
And the rationale that's given, just so people can connect it, the rationale is given is that a woman with a higher hemoglobin will have a better success dealing with the hemorrhaging that comes from childbirth. It's like, wait a minute, that's correlational research. That's not causational research.
Yeah.
That's where the mistake is.
Right. Okay. So when we come back, we'll get into the prenatal vitamin, which will automatically cause us to talk more about the issues with ceruloplasmin, and ceruloplasmin being extremely important in the fetal development and in mom's health too. So stick with us. You're listening to Morley Robbins on First Mondays with Morley. His website's rcp123.org, and this is Dr. Ben Edwards with You're the Cure. VeritasMedical.com is our website. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archive programs and good information at veritasmedical.com. Right here, special guest on the telephone with us on this first Monday with Morley Robbins here on the program.
Right, we're right back at it, talking maternal fetal mortality, maternal fetal health, how to have a healthy pregnancy, healthy baby, healthy delivery. One note I want to make, we've talked to midwives before on the show, but midwives tend to be more hands-off as far as not trying to micromanage and jump in there and force things from a limited human perspective. They're going to let nature take its course, God's design play out. And it's interesting to see the correlation. Countries that have used midwives to deliver babies, which some of those Scandinavian countries like Finland and Netherlands, Denmark, that have the lowest infant mortality rates, have the highest midwifery rates. Up to 75% of the babies born in these Scandinavian countries use midwives. Even in Great Britain, it's 50% of live births are through midwives. Kate Middleton, I believe, had all three of hers with a midwife. Contrast that to America, where it's 10% or less. Some states are very unfriendly to midwives. And we delivered our last child with a midwife here locally. And one thing I learned during that delivery time, they did the delayed cord clamping. And I started to ask the midwife about that. And she said, oh, yeah, a third of the baby's blood is still in the placenta after the baby's out. So the baby's delivered, the umbilical cord is still intact. They don't cut it right away because they need to wait for the pulsation to stop. So the midwife would just feel the cord every little bit and wait for the pulsations to stop, basically, give it a few minutes. And it was allowing all the baby's blood to pump back into the baby from the placenta, from inside mama. And the midwife explained all these stem cells that will bring healing to any birth trauma that happened and give this baby a head start, a lot of the immune system cells, and even the iron. We're not anti-iron. We need iron, but we need it in the right amount and at the right time. And so that iron will come back into the baby when you don't cut the cord right away. So that was one fascinating thing. And then the other thing we learned in that iron discussion, too, was the breast milk. The breast milk of mama contains no iron. The iron's in the blood, obviously, and it's a third of the blood in the placenta and that you don't get when you cut the cord too soon. And then we iron fortify the baby formula. But in mother's milk, there is no iron. And it turns out the iron feeds the bad bugs, the bad pathogens in the GI tract. If that baby happens to get exposed to one of these Salmonella, Shigella, E. coli, whatever. Because the baby initially, the GI tract is basically sterile. And the baby's GI tract needs to be populated with healthy bacteria. And that healthy covering in the intestine will help to block some of these bad bugs. So mother's milk contains, wouldn't you know, the ingredients that help the good bacteria to flourish. And the mother's milk does not contain iron because iron feeds the bad bugs. So just a little side note there on midwifery, the outcomes appear to be much better. Preterm birth and infant mortality, all those stats are better with midwives. Now, I'm not going to put all the blame, although I think we can put a lot of the blame on the system and the obstetricians, but obstetricians obviously will get the more complex and complicated. Midwives tend to get the low risk, non-complicated, and I get that. And I will throw out there that because I've had people call me with, hey, our infant mortality rates are so high in America because we try to save the premature ones, like down to 23 weeks even, or somewhere super low where other countries won't. They won't attempt to save those real preemies. But even when you take out the preemies, those super preemies, our infant mortality rates are still dead last of all the industrialized countries. So some caveats there. I'm not, this isn't a simple one solution kind of answer, but obviously we need to take a deeper look at what's going on, what's wrong, why are obstetricians in the U.S. healthcare system and hospitals delivering babies getting such poor outcomes, and there's lots of ways to point fingers everywhere. But I like to give a shout-out to all the midwives. They do a great job. But even midwives are susceptible to some of these deceptions. And we're going to go to the prenatals as being one of those, because it pretty much everyone I know recommends just routine prenatal vitamins. And we'll go through some of these ingredients like iron, calcium, synthetic Bs, vitamin D, synthetic retinol, which is vitamin A, too much zinc. And we're just going to start with iron. We've talked a lot with Morley about the excess iron in our diet because of iron fortification. We got off track a long time ago with thinking we needed extra iron. And it turns out the body recycles the iron that we do have. We have an amazing recycling machine, because most of the iron in the body is in the red blood cells, and the red blood cells get recycled every few months, every 2 to 3 months. They're dying, and we recycle all that iron that's inside of a red blood cell. So we actually only need about 1 milligram of iron coming in from outside sources per day. 1 milligram dietarily per day is what we really need, because that's what naturally we kind of lose in just our GI tract from the cells sloughing off and just normal kind of usage and wear and tear in the body. We slough off a little iron every day, but it's only about 1 milligram. But the prenatal vitamins, iron fortified food, which a lot of these American women are eating, obviously, enriched white flour, it's enriched with iron and other synthetic vitamins. And to the tune of 1 cup of Cheerios with 18 milligrams of iron, that's a multigrain Cheerio, 1 cup, 18 milligrams, and I just said you needed 1. So on top of this iron fortified food and getting excess iron into the body, and remember, excess iron gets stored in the tissues, and excess iron stored in the tissues drives inflammation. But then you throw a prenatal onto that, and prenatal vitamins can have upwards of 65 milligrams of iron in a prenatal. And which, by the way, is why a lot of women get upset stomach when they take those prenatals on top of their morning sickness. But so I don't know that we need to spend a ton of time on the iron part, because we already know excess iron in the body drives oxidative stress and inflammation. I'll let Morley comment if there's some particulars with excess iron with the womb and what that does. But then we'll move on to the synthetic Bs and the vitamin D and the retinol. But I think a question just got texted in.
Yeah, let's read that. Then it says, Robin says, today's show is so important. So much of this info is comparable to tumor environment. Would you please ask Morley to do a show on cancer, especially tumor environment in relationship to blocking the pathways or signals and how it relates to magnesium and copper and iron? After research, it is so confusing. You want your babies to grow inside during pregnancy, but you don't want tumors to grow with cancer. Help, please.
Right, and that probably is a whole nother show. So thank you, Robin, for that suggestion. I'll throw that to Morley to consider for next month or at some future show, because that is a really important thing
real,
to address.
Real quick, just a comment on that.
Yeah, go right ahead.
What we need to understand, and what I'm just beginning to understand, so I'm not trying to be braggadocious. It takes time to kind of discern this. There is an innate intelligence in our body. When I first met my wife, Dr. Liz, more than 10 years ago, she talked about the innate intelligence. And I looked at her quietly to myself thinking, well, if there's an innate intelligence, why do we need so many doctors and nurses? But what I'm coming to realize is that the innate intelligence in our body is, in fact, copper. Copper is the innate intelligence that regulates our metabolism. And to Robin's point, someone who's intelligent knows how to respond to a crying baby or to a teenager who's acting out. And you don't treat them the same way. And so happy to have that discussion. But I think what we need to really internalize is that Mother Nature has had the solution all along. It's called bioavailable copper. But over the last 100 years, there's been a rather synchronistic series of events that have led to a depletion of copper in our soil, in our food, in our animals, and in the humans who eat both of those. So I think that's really the focal point, but happy to have that discussion later on.
Okay. Yeah, and good point on the soil. I mean, there's a massive depletion of copper. The largest depletion I've read in any study was an 81% depletion of copper in our modern soil compared to 50 to 100 years ago. And the second point is, Weston A. Price noted when he traveled the world and looked at healthy people groups, a number of these people groups would preferentially give the organ meats to women of childbearing age, especially newlyweds that were about to have babies. They would give the organ meats like the liver and the eyes and the heart and the kidneys to the pregnant mamas. And this is where we find most of the nutrients in general, but specifically the bioavailable copper. So they had that innate wisdom ancestrally as a group, these different people groups around the world. So Morley, on the iron in the prenatal, obviously, what, you know, the very broad overview I gave was excess iron in the tissue drives oxidative stress. It mixes with the oxygen in the body and causes rust. Anything in particular in the womb that we need to add to that before we move on to synthetic D and Bs and retinol?
I think it's just that there's the placenta and the womb need to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And the womb runs on ceruloplasmin and the placenta runs on zyklopen. And it's really important to understand that there's a copper-driven mechanism in both of those tissues. They have different names, but they're talking. The communication is what's missing in the developing fetus. That's where the breakdown is.
Okay. So without the copper, you don't get the ceruloplasmin fully functional, the Swiss Army knife.
Right.
And so you break down in the communication of these various energy production pathways and serotonin and these different neurochemicals, and you just lack communication, basically, that has lots of detrimental effects.
It's interesting. I read an article a couple weeks ago that, again, early life forms that were responding to oxygen on this planet, they didn't have a nervous system. What was the cellular communication? It was copper. Copper was the sensor about whether oxygen was burning right or not.
Right.
And copper is the cellular communicator in the human body. It absolutely is.
Yep.
No, it's no more complicated than that.
Yep. And copper, I forgot to mention earlier, copper is what turns that Swiss Army knife from being inactive, so all the different switches being closed in the Swiss Army knife, to open it up and being fully functional, where you can have all the different tools out of the Swiss Army knife. It's bioavailable copper is what allows that functionality to come to your pocket knife, your ceruloplasmin. So I would imagine these different prenatal vitamin ingredients we're running through, they're going to have an impact on the copper, a negative impact on the copper, and therefore a negative impact on your Swiss Army knife and all the downstream effects of that. So let's start with synthetic vitamin D that's in the prenatal. Morley, what's that doing?
Well, it's responding to correlational research, not causational research. It's causing renal potassium wasting. It's causing iron storage, which is what they want, wink, wink, not knowing that it's iron circulation that's the key, and it's blocking the absorption and the use of retinol. And retinol is what loads those coppers into the Swiss Army knife. If you don't have retinol in the system, you can't make the Swiss Army knife. And there's this symbiotic relationship between copper and retinol that is profoundly important in the body, and especially in the developing fetus. What I would encourage the listeners who are either pregnant or interested in getting pregnant, or they have family members who are pregnant, just Google fetal development and retinol deficiency or fetal development copper deficiency, and then ask yourself, so then why aren't they putting a focus on those two topics? And they don't. Everything is about iron and vitamin D, not about copper and retinol.
Well,
that's where the disconnect is.
Speaking of retinol, which is vitamin A, but a natural source of vitamin A is from animal sources like grass-fed butter, cod liver oil. Talk about the other synthetic forms of vitamin A that are in most of these prenatals.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Dr. Ben. Was there a question there? Because I missed it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Talk to the listeners about the difference between the naturally occurring retinol, which is vitamin A from animal sources, versus the synthetic retinoic acids and other forms that they will call retinol that are in the prenatals.
Yeah, my younger son has a PhD from Stanford in biochemistry. And I think the only time we've ever had any kind of heated discussion is trying to draw the distinction between chemistry and biology. And Tom will take the stance, well, chemically, they're the retinol from animal tissue, that's what fat stands for, from animal tissue. The retinol from animal tissue is chemically the same as what they have in these supplements. I said, that may be true, but the biology is not the same. And he's always said, well, you're right about that. So I think that's the missing piece of the puzzle, is there's an energetic dimension that only biology can encompass. And that's why organic food is so important. That's why natural elements are so powerful. And while these elements can be recreated in a test tube, they don't have the same vitality. And so the synthetic D is coming from a soy-based oil of lambskin, lanolin, doesn't have the properties that Mother Nature has when our skin gets kissed by the sunlight. It's completely different. It's activated in a different process. So, again, we've been conditioned to believe that they're the same, but biologically they're not. And so the nutrients that we're getting from our whole food diet, from our organic diet, has a vitality that can't be replicated in a test tube. And that's so central to our well-being. People need to really stop and really think about the significance of that issue and how does it relate to the food that I'm eating.
Yeah.
'Cause if they're not getting their food from a farmer's market, or from the perimeter of a supermarket, then they're not getting vitalized food.
Right. And the ratios in these naturally occurring food-based forms of these vitamins and minerals, like the vitamin D and vitamin A, in nature you'll find that in a 10-to-1 ratio, not in this huge ratio that we get when we take mega doses of the vitamin D, or just the standard typical supplemental doses of synthetic vitamin D. So that's a key point, too. And I know this is a whole nother topic, but we could at least touch on it. Those receptors, the nuclear receptors on the genes, the DNA, the vitamin A, vitamin D receptors, they work together in tandem, and you have to have them both functioning. And when you're doing synthetic forms of vitamin D and you're not getting the retinol in your diet, you're not getting animal-based forms of fat, that ratio not only is off, but it impacts these nuclear receptors and affects gene expression.
Well, I absolutely agree. And the part that people are not being taught is that the sunlight that we're being taught is so important for making vitamin D. That is absolutely true. The sunlight needs to kiss the skin to activate the cholesterol so it can then become vitamin D. That's the mechanism. But that same sunlight is essential for activating the process to break down vitamin A into its component parts. And that's why there's a 10-to-1 ratio of A to D, is because A is 10 times more important. But the only message that's coming out of the media and out of medicine is, oh, it's vitamin D, vitamin D, vitamin D, when in fact the body runs on the energy and the genius of real vitamin A. But that's not being taught, so then people don't think to look for it, don't realize that it's the actual mechanism to load copper into the enzymes that run our body. And because no one talks about copper, and no one talks about retinol, but all they talk about is iron and vitamin D, then people are being misled and misfed to think that that's how the body works. This is all programming. It's not the truth. There's a difference between programming and the truth. And people need to really discipline themselves to ask the questions of whoever's taking care of them, to really step back and say, what else, is there more to the story? A woman who's being told to take more iron because her hemoglobin is too low for the pending pregnancy or for pending delivery. He says, was there more to the story? Do you know about this research or that research? Do you know about Dr. Steer? And if they get back a blank look on their practitioner's face, well, that tells you volumes about the totality of their understanding of the dynamic. And people just need to be willing to challenge the world of convention and say, is there more to the story? And that's really what these conversations are about, is your willingness to, you know, your commitment to veritas, to the truth, is what's driving these conversations, because there is more to the story. And I think the people, the growing audience, is waking up to this important message that there is more to the story. And let's get the whole story. It's like Paul Harvey's kind of the mythical leader of these radio shows, because he's always talking about, now you know the rest of the story. And I think that's what's important about these conversations.
Yeah. Well, and it's a good time, I think, for me to comment on medical education and the system that it is here in America. And again, I'm not anti emergency care, trauma care, acute life-saving. You know, we're fantastic at that. It's everything else we're dead last in, like infant mortality, maternal mortality, overall mortality, chronic diseases. I mean, we're dead last. And Morley and I were talking at the break, and he made a comment. I wholeheartedly agree that medical education, we're missing the basic physiology. I would venture to say that the listener who's listened to every one of our shows, Morley, which is probably 30 shows now, they know more cellular physiology, true physiology. How does a cell work? How does a mitochondria work? The complex 1 through 5. I can almost guarantee, I'd bet the farm on it. Go to any doctor, not only in Lubbock, but anywhere in America. Your average doctor, go in their clinic and ask them, how many complexes are there in a mitochondria? And they're going to look at you like, what? What's a complex? I mean, this basic physiology, and that is basic physiology, how many complexes are in the mitochondria. And I'll be the first to raise my hand to say, I would have given you a blank stare and said, I don't know, before right. A couple years ago, after I met Morley and started looking back at this. But so medical students and doctors are taught very limited basic physiology. And if you were taught it in the first year, which that's where you do the book work, that's where you do take those classes, you memorize a certain component of it for the test, basically, and then you forget it all. And you get into the hospital your third and fourth years, and that's where you really learn how to be a doctor, and then even more so in your intern year after medical school, and then residency. And during those years, you're walking the hospital floors with the attending physicians, and that you're like an apprentice at that point. And you're walking around for hours on end and all night long, some when you're on call, learning how to run the protocols. When someone comes in with X, Y, and Z complaint or symptom, here's the protocol. Here's the flow sheet. And it's a protocol-based medicine. So where do these protocols come from? Not a deep understanding of physiology. Doctors don't have that. We learn to be a doctor in the hospital following these protocols, and the protocols got off. At some point in our past, we got off from this basic physiology. And from what I can see, where we get off is protocols get written by committees. Committees get instructed by certain expert panels and different national or local expert panels. Well, who's informing those panels? Well, it's some of it's coming out of research labs, and some of it's coming out of opinion, and some of it's coming out of these evidence-based medical journals. But so we really got to look at that. These expert opinions and medical-based evidence-based articles, where are they coming out of these labs? Well, what are the labs doing? They're doing what they get paid to do. I mean, a researcher, your basic scientist, even a really smart PhD guy, he needs money from somewhere. Money doesn't grow on trees in labs, laboratories. The funding comes from somewhere, and he's got to apply for that funding. You've got to get grants. You've got to get funding from somewhere. And so when you're making your presentation or your proposal for funding, it's going to be influenced by what's the funder want to hear? What's the funder want to see? What's the bias coming in from the money source? And you're going to alter and adjust your research based off what you feel like is going to get the most funding or any funding. A great book I read recently by Rupert Sheldrake, out of the UK, Science Set Free, and he talks about this. He said, well, privately, scientists will tell you X, Y, and Z is what they believe. But publicly, they have to say ABC, because publicly they have to say things that allow them to get funded. But privately, their understanding or their philosophy or their thinking and their beliefs are totally separate. And they have to delineate out the two. What can get them funded? And that's what they have to really zero in on, not only with their public statements, but their published data, their published literature, and their experiments that they do. So people need to step back and understand, where's this medical curriculum really based out of? What? And it's not true, deep understanding of physiology, because if it was, we would understand the importance of ceruloplasm. And your average doctor doesn't even know the word ceruloplasm. We'd understand the importance of bioavailable copper. We'd take a deep look at why did ancestrally we prefer to give organ meats to the prenatals as a prenatal vitamin, so to speak. And why are our health outcomes so bad? And why do more babies die? Why are more moms dying? And we would dive deep into physiology, but we don't. So there's a big disconnect there. Sorry, I went on a little tangent there, but it's important for the listener to know it's time to take responsibility for your own health, educate yourself, find a practitioner, hopefully who's starting to become more educated along these matters. So, and share these shows with your healthcare practitioners, the ones that have a real love for the truth in them, I would say. So, Morley, we got to wrap it up. Any closing thoughts, closing comments?
I think what I would just say, and there was a wonderful set of observations that you just shared. The only thing I would say is it's important for the listeners to know that there is a difference between the social construction of reality and the truth. And for whatever reason, I was motivated and have stayed with it over the last 10 years to really study the science, to learn the truth, and to challenge the social construction of reality that's found on the internet and in many practitioners' offices, mm-hmm. because they've been trained by this belief system of what it's supposed to be, but that isn't grounded in the science, at least as I've studied it and as I've discussed it with leading mineral researchers around the world. There is a disconnect between the bench research and the truth of the bench research, and then the social construction of reality spin that's presented on the internet and in the training that pervades the practitioner's thinking. Yeah. That's just important for people to know there is a difference.
Right. Well, thank you for bringing the physiology and some of this deeper understanding. And listeners, thank you all for bearing with us as we try to wade through this stuff, because it's important. Together we can turn this thing around, but like I said, you're going to have to take charge of your own health, get educated, and that's the point of what we're doing. Veritas is trying to educate people to stay out of the doctor's office and be healthy. So go and continue to get educated and be in health, and join us next week for more. Next month we'll do it again, Morley, first Monday of April. It's amazing. This year's flying by. Thank you again for joining us today. RCP123.org is Morley's website, and VeritasMedical.com is ours. Thank you, Morley.
Thanks again for the opportunity. Really enjoyed it.
And you've been listening to You're the Cure right here on AM 580 and 95.9 FM. We'll be back next Monday right here with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Again, check out the website, VeritasMedical.com. You can catch past archived programs all right there at the website, VeritasMedical.com.